Well, just over a week ago, the Attorney General, Rossa Fanning, was asked by government to prepare a report on the legal advice on which the state based its legal strategy in dealing with claims for medical card holders seeking compensation for care in private nursing homes. The report came out today, a ringing endorsement, Jack, of historic advice and successive government action taken in line with it.
Yes, so the quote from the Attorney General's report that is doing the rounds and travelling today is sound, accurate and appropriate. That's the Attorney General, Rossa Fanning's view on the legal advices that were offered by his office to successive governments on the issue of whether or not you could charge a person who is in receipt of a medical card for private nursing home access. And it's the kind of blanket defence, I think, that many of us have been expecting since last Tuesday, when following the initial publication of the details of this legal strategy, the Taoiseach stood up in the Dáil and effectively said, look, I don't remember when I was briefed on this or if I was briefed on this, because you'll recall that that was the first question, who knew what and when, that kind of story. But had I been, I would have signed off, and it was a good policy then, it's a good policy now. So I think since then, this expectation has been building that the government's position would get a legal sign-off and that strong legal endorsement from the Attorney General, which is what has followed today. Now, that answers the question from a legal point of view. I think there is still an open question on the politics of this and whether there's a kind of moral or political or ethical justification for those charges, and also on disability payments, which RTE broke last week.
And the report also, it does stray into some of that justification. It goes into the state of the state coffers when this legal advice was offered and when it was acted on. So it doesn't stick strictly to the legal advice. It also gives some insight into the context in which it was offered.
It does, and it's a strongly argued piece of legal advice, you know, and I think that the Attorney General's personality is clear and forceful throughout it. And he does make those kind of little segues into commentary about the state of the state's finances at the time, but also a little bit of media analysis as well at some stages, being quite dismissive of the kind of commentary in the press that led up to this report, and certainly gives a kind of a schoolmasterly assertion of the role of the Attorney General and of the state and the government's right to defend itself, and you know how modern democracies assert themselves through the courts. So, you know, it's a whistle stop tour through the kind of legal mind of Rossa Fanning, as well as on a political issue of the day.
Well, he's free to text us on 51551 if he wants us, or indeed tweet us on @LateDebateRTE. Christopher O'Sullivan, I suppose your party colleague is the minister of the day. Who knew what when is not really of interest to Rossa Fanning, because he says the minister is in charge of the department under the Minister and Secretaries Act. So what do you want your party colleague to do now in terms of taking decisions on what happens to people who are on a medical card in a private nursing home during the time covered by this report?
Yeah, so look, I think as kind of Jack has done there is going to be a temptation, and certainly I think we'll see it during the week in the Dáil, to perhaps dismiss maybe and trivialise a lot of what the AG has said in his report, because in many respects, certainly from an opposition point of view, it backed up the comments from the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste last week, where they felt that the approach was appropriate, and that's backed up here. That said, I don't think that you'll find government ministers, or certainly government DDs like myself, jumping for joy and celebrating just because the AG backs up what the Tánaiste and Taoiseach have said. So there's certainly, you know, it's not a case of just leaving it lie now that the report has issued, or that the AG has issued a report. There will be a lengthy, robust debate in the Dáil this week on the findings of the report, but the whole way it was handled, and the fact now that the minister, both ministers, Minister for Social Protection and Minister for Health, will take 3 months, you know, perhaps a bit longer than maybe some people would have liked it to take to issue an approach to this. But, you know, they will have to take all of those things into account.
Maybe more legal advice?
Perhaps, but I think it's as was stated in the report, and as Jack alluded to there, I think all of this has to be taken into context, and there has to be a balance in the fact that there is certainly a moral obligation on the state to look after the most vulnerable and to ensure that the most vulnerable are protected, and the fact as well that we have to look at the resources of the day to ensure that this generation are protected. So I think that's very important, and I'm looking forward to the debate, and particularly, and I must say, in relation to the disabled persons allowance, I was kind of surprised in terms of the findings there when he said that there was no...
Yeah, he says in paragraph 167, state is not obliged to provide redress retrospectively. The statute of limitations could apply and the ultra vires finding against...
I was surprised, I suppose, mainly by that in the context of the Taoiseach's comments last week when he said that, you know, that we hadn't a leg to stand on here. So, I was surprised at that. But I think what that does, it introduces the debate as to how far we go in terms of redress, compensation, and as well the whole approach to disability allowance payments in the first place.
Well, closer to your own party, the Taoiseach said we can't keep continuously paying for the wrongs of the past out of today's tax resources. So are you siding with the Taoiseach, who believes no legal leg to stand on, or your own leader, who says that you can't continuously pay for the wrongs of the past with today's resources?
But I don't think that the my own leader, I don't think the Taoiseach was for one second disregarding or ruling out the option of some type of scheme for particularly the disability payment allowance that we're talking about. And in fact, look, I think his own record speaks for itself in terms of the micro redress scheme, the block scheme as well, which, you know, will amount to about 2.7 billion. And the fact that this year there's a budget of 46 billion for social welfare payments, loan, and social protection.
Right.
This state, you know, we're not running away from any of our responsibilities.
Okay. Michael Healy-Ray, it now comes down to what approach the minister takes, the current minister who's in charge of the department. For people who are on medical cards, who availed of private nursing home care because there wasn't another option available or because that was the choice they took, what would you like to see done in those cases now, notwithstanding the finite resources of the state?
Well, the first thing that I would have to say is while I'd have regard for the AG's opinion, it doesn't mean to say that I'd have to agree with it. The second thing is, what fluting around are the two ministers going to be doing for 12 weeks? Why do they have to take 12 weeks to analyse a report that we read immediately after receiving it? We understood it the same as anybody else would understand. It is not rocket science. Now, to be fair to them, give them a week or 10 days.
Maybe they're reading more than we read today. Maybe they're reading the legal advice that wasn't waived on for this report to discover in what cases the state settled and in what cases some of the plaintiffs withdrew their complaint in the first place.
Well, I would have to say, in listening to what you've said, and I've heard other debates going on about this between a number of people this evening, and what I think will cause most upset is that for us to know what the government are going to do next, bar what will happen perhaps in the Dáil tomorrow and the next number of days and maybe next week, we're literally going to have to wait for 3 months. I don't think that's right. I don't think that's proper.
And if at the end of those 3 months they came up with a redress scheme that paid some of the people back who had to acquire private nursing home care, or indeed in the case of the disabled person's maintenance allowance, if it set up a redress scheme for them, would the 3 months have been worth it then, in your view?
You're going to see this report being torn to shreds and torn asunder and dragged backwards and forwards on the floor of the Dáil. You know that as good as I do, and the other people here tonight know that. That's going to happen, because there are people who will make it quite clear that they're not happy with the report. And I listened very carefully to what Jack said, and he was very correct, that while legally and every otherwise, this might be okay, but is this morally okay? Is this all right? Because we have to think about the most important thing in all of this. It's not the AG. It's not the Taoiseach. It's not the Taoiseach. It's not the Minister for Health. It's not the Minister for Social Protection. It's the people. They're the important people, the service users. Were they treated rightly or wrongly at the time?
All right.
Were they rightly charged or wrongly charged?
All right.
And that's another question.
Lynn Boylan, then what is the moral decision on this with regard to people who were firstly, who weren't paid their disabled person's maintenance allowance, and secondly, people on medical cards who got private nursing home care? What's the moral decision with regard to those two categories of people who are affected by this?
That is the question, I suppose. Look, nobody is surprised by the Attorney General's opinion coming out. I mean, the previous Attorney General, you know, came out with a report saying that the guidelines for Sapone's soiree in the Merion Court Hotel was legitimate. So nobody expects the Attorney General to go against the government. But I do think that you ask a lawyer for a legal opinion, you get a legal opinion, and the law is quite, you know, it can be black and white and it's quite cold and heartless, but legislators and people who are elected by the people have to balance, and they have to balance what's legally right, but as Michael has said, what's morally right.
And in your view, I mean, seeing as you don't need legal advice to make a moral judgment, what is your moral judgment as regards who should be paid and who shouldn't be paid?
What I think is that this is a broader systemic issue that we have within this state.
I know, but we can't solve the systemic issues. These two, we have two categories of people who have been directly affected by this, and it's a moral call for a Minister of Health to set up or not set up a scheme. In your opinion, what's the correct moral call?
What I think is what we need to see is the full disclosure and transparency of what previous ministers and ministers knew. And my colleague David Cullinan has been calling for that.
You think that the professional legal privilege should have been waived and all of those documents put into the public domain?
No, what I'm saying is we need to have full disclosure as to what happened in this case. But this case is not an isolated case. This is a system of approach that the government has taken and successive governments have taken. The people who have deep pockets and can pay for lawyers will get paid back by the state, and those who can't afford to get legal and fight for years through the courts won't. And that's the way that, for some reason, successive governments have treated the public. They didn't go after the church. When you talk about financial coffers, why didn't the state go after the church to pay up what they owe? Why is it that it's always the case of, you know, protecting
They went back for second helpings on what they had initially agreed with the churches, but they knew there was no legal basis, having signed the contract, to do so. Although there's some other legal advice being offered on that on the public airwaves this evening.
Well, lawyers will always differ. That's why they're settled in the court. I mean, that's the nature of the law. If you have a lawyer, they'll tell you what, you know, they'll give you a legal opinion. The only definitive decision that legal opinion can be taken is in the court. Right. And the state did not want to take cases.
In fact, in one case, they
increased a payout to somebody from €30,000 to €100,000 just to prevent that case going to court and actually having a definitive decision.
In some settlements, there was no financial settlement, so there was a mix of different results through the settlements, and a settlement isn't an acknowledgement of liability either, so I think that's important.
Right.
But that is why we need the full transparency, full disclosure as to what was and who what was paid out.
All right, but what is the moral call here? Just to one final go at this. What is the moral call for people who are denied disabled persons maintenance allowance, where the Taoiseach says there isn't a leg to stand on for the state, notwithstanding the Attorney General's advice that there is no obligation to pay redress retrospectively. What's the moral call?
Well, I think it's wrong that people who were denied their disability allowance when they were in residential homes,
so they should be paid back.
But these are the decisions that need to be taken, but the opposition has to have the full information at its disposal in order to make those decisions.
All right, so 3 months isn't unreasonable, is it? Then
we'll see in the debate if more information comes on Thursday.
It's not just when people get lawyered up and go after the Department of Health, is it? If they take to the streets in sufficient numbers and protest, even where the state doesn't think it is a legal case to answer, like the MICA issue that you mentioned, there becomes a political case for it and it does get paid out. And when seats are in danger in a constituency like Donegal, the state reverses engines and pays out when there's no legal obligation.
Yeah, I mean, there's payouts in terms of responsibilities or mistakes that have been made by the state, and there's payouts that have, because of errors and really unjust results mistakes that were taken by commercial entities.
So when the AG says in point 117 in this report, while there is always a degree of risk that a case could succeed, there is a clear and unambiguous evidence in files that I have reviewed that there was a bona fide and viable legal defence in those cases. He said provision for payment wasn't in legislation in the case of the nursing homes. It wasn't provided for financially in the Finance Act that year. The state is not obliged to pay, just as it wouldn't pay for people in health or education who are seeking private options there. Most cases would have been statute barred. The claimants had no locus standi, as in they weren't the people directly affected by it. And some plaintiffs discontinued their complaint anyway. So in one case, we have political action and the state reverses engines and pays out. And in a case where there's a bona fide case, in the opinion of the Attorney General, the state cavils and prevaricates.
And like what you've just read out there is a legal opinion, and that is something that has to be taken into account. But the, I suppose, the art of politics and the decisions that we have to make have to take into account those moral obligations and those moral decisions.
The art of politics is keeping your seat, obviously, which is the higher imperative in Donegal.
It's not necessarily that. And I'll give you another perfect example. And what I would like to see out of this is, as I said, a discussion to how we treat these cases where the most vulnerable are looking for help and assistance going forward. And a perfect example of that would be something that we all deal with probably on a day-to-day basis, things like carers allowance, things like disability payments, where on too many occasions people are made jump through hoops and are made climb obstacles and are often probably discouraged from pursuing a claim. So they may make a claim for something like carers allowance, they're turned down, they come to the likes of myself or Michael or Lynn for assistance, just maybe to do a letter of appeal or a cover letter, intervention other than that. And then on appeal, they may get it. But the original, I suppose, negative results is almost like a discouragement to pursue that. And I think what needs to come out of this debate is how easy and how we facilitate the most vulnerable in terms of access and payments that they're entitled
to. But the difference, Michael Healy-Ray, isn't it, when it comes to the most vulnerable applying for a particular entitlement with or without the help of a TD, is that there are clear criteria, at least nominally laid down. In the case of who's been compensated, in the case of private nursing home care availed of by medical card holders, we don't know what the criteria for settlement was because it was never tested in court.
Yes, it's not clear, but one thing, and you keep asking this question, and you're right to keep asking the question, and that is it morally right, or should we be just sticking with the legal advice and saying, oh, there's nothing to do here, move on to the next issue? But the point about this is, we're a state, we're supposed to be a caring state, a caring government, a caring nation. We're supposed to take care of people. So if it's morally wrong to deny these people the money that was kept from them, well, maybe that there should be a scheme looked at. But the one thing we have to be very careful of is, look at how many times this state has fought, for instance, people who were terminally ill, who were looking for redress from the state, and they wanted to get their day in court. It had nothing to do with money. Yes, money had to be paid to them, but they literally were sick. There was people in their deathbeds, and they were fighting in the forecourts at the same time to get the government to acknowledge the fact that there was harm done to them. And they were put, and their families were put through that agony. I won't go mentioning names because it's not right to do tonight. I wouldn't want to upset their families. But I remember their names. And in particular, a lot of ladies come to my head that were wronged by the state. And they had to fight from their deathbeds. And that's a horrendous thing to do. Many of the people
a moral obligation that the Attorney General lays out there, that the state is custodian of the state's finance, or the government is custodian of the state's finances as well, and has to take some regard of that in how it behaves, because that money is being spent on services for vulnerable people today.
Okay, but can I answer that? And I'll answer it with a word some of you used there already, the whole Mikey issue. If you look at what the government's response was to that in the very beginning, the answer was, move on away from this. We're not paying compensation. We're giving these people nothing because it wasn't our fault. That's what they effectively said. Now, and I'd give full credit to Lynn's party, to Sinn Féin and to others. I know that people like myself, independents, we put our shoulder to the wheel. But I always give credit where credit is due. And I know that Sinn Féin were very, very proactive on this issue and fought on it. And what happened? Eventually, all of a sudden, the government did a complete U-turn and said, oh, yes, yes, we will have to do this. But they were brought kicking and dragging and screaming to the table by the opposition people who made, and of course, I give full credit to the people themselves that were affected and the way they organised, and they came and they protested, and they were right to do so. Your home is your castle, and they were in a desperate state and they needed assistance. And yes, I'll give credit then to the government. Right. They did, but they were brought kicking, dragging and screaming.
Do you ever think that there's an instance where the government should defend itself, or there should be a strategy of defending itself, or should we just fund every single claim that's made against the government?
If your answer is that they were wrong,
if your answer is that they were wrong
to pay the likes of people,
welcome out and say that. Sorry, your answer to that was...
No, my answer was, I'm asking Christopher the question, is he saying that they shouldn't have got the scheme?
I mentioned the scheme myself as something that we did right in terms of...
He did, but he didn't.
That
he didn't.
And do you think, sorry, and seeing as you have held it up as an example, Christopher O'Sullivan, do you think it's a shining example? Do you think it should be applied elsewhere, even where there's some doubt over the state's legal culpability?
It's an example of exactly what the conversation that we're having here, where there was legal advice, there was very little culpability.
Well, we've now reached a point of 21 minutes past 10 where the MICA redress scheme is the shining example of how to deal with people who seek redress from the state.
I'm just using that as an example of the fact that the state don't run away from these things. When there's an ask or when there's a question about a redress, that we don't just ignore it, we don't move on.
I just wonder, just to play devil's advocate, like, is there a risk of overcorrection here? You know, that like you disregard legal advice entirely and make every single call, particularly when it involves billions of euros of taxpayers' money, on what is politically contingent or politically acceptable at the time. And I'm minded of the defective apartments redress scheme, which I think is going to cost something like 2.5 billion. I understand that the strong advice from the Attorney General in that instance was that there was no liability for the state. And you can imagine how no liability would accrue to the state.
But the state has failed to regulate. And it's the same with MICA. They failed to regulate. They allowed a construction industry that was self-regulatory. And that's the legacy now.
State has also failed to pursue those.
That's my point, when we're protecting the financial coffers of the state, we didn't pursue the people who were responsible, even though the government does have some responsibility. And in the same time, when some of this legal advice has been given to successive governments, we were bailing out the banks. So there is a hypocrisy as to when we're prudent with the finances. And
having established that principle, you're still not prepared to go down the road, Lynn Boylan, of saying that people in these cases, the disabled persons, maintenance allowance, and medical card holders who had to pay for their own private nursing home care, that they should be compensated as well.
No, I think you need to assess it and look at how many people are still, in some cases, still alive now and what is the cost. Of course you have to assess it. But my point at the beginning, Colin, was there is a systemic approach to people. And the MICA, while yes, the MICA people and living with horrific conditions in their houses, they're a community that came together and there was empowerment in community. You're talking about very vulnerable people when it comes to nursing homes or disabilities or people who are taking on the state because they've had a medical misadventure. And they have to fight that alone. And the state was happy to drag them through the courts for as long as possible.
Another cohort of people who fit into that category is people who are looking for respite. You were speaking in the Doyle last week about people with 2-hour drives each way who are dropping their vulnerable adult relatives off or adults with intellectual disabilities off at respite centres, people who have not been provided for having moved from below the age of 18 to above the age of 18. They have effectively too much to be doing in the care of their family members to be protesting in the same numbers as we saw for MICA redress or any other issue.
Yes, I said this on the record of the Dáil, that a deputation came to me of parents of what I call, my wording is special children. And I shouldn't use the word children because they're young adults now. But when they go over 18, it's like they go off the edge of a cliff when it comes to getting services. And these parents that came to me, the one thing that I saw in their faces, these were caring, lovely people who adore their children and who want to keep them at home, but they need respite services. And what I could see in their faces that day, Saturday inside in Scott's Hotel in Killarney at my clinic, was tiredness, a weariness in their faces, because all they wanted was a break, a little bit of respite. And they wanted their young people to have a service in their locality. That's the greater Killarney area, because we have a facility in North Kerry, and in the greater Killarney area, we have nothing. And we need to have respite services, because look at the work that these parents are doing. They're doing everything for their children. They want to keep them at home, but they need that bit of assistance. And I would hope that all of us campaigning, that we will ensure that a proper respite service, and we need that network of respite available throughout the country.
Right.
But I want to create one debate, and I'm not going to get into it now, but I want to use the word. In 2011, politicians, and I'm not being critical of them, they made a decision with regard to decongregating settings.
All right. I know you have a particular opinion. You think that some of those settings...
That one shoe doesn't fit all sizes.
Sure.
and that we should not say that congregated settings are a bad thing, because in certain circumstances they're a good thing, and everybody working in that field, they acknowledge that. But politicians made up their minds in 2011, and I would
and there are other examples where community settings have been well resourced, that when people are moved out into those settings, they thrive.
Yes,
when those resources are put in place.
But one shoe doesn't fit all sizes.
Christopher O'Sullivan, is this isolated to Michael Healy Ray's constituency? Or have you experienced, given the geographic spread in your area, similar issues?
Myself and Michael are in neighbouring constituencies, obviously. And funny enough, as recently as today, I had a group of parents in my constituency office with the exact same issue. Pre-pandemic, the parents or guardians of the service users would have been able to avail of 2 days a weekend, once a month, to avail of respite. That was cut down to 1 day post-pandemic. After, you know, during the pandemic, there was no respite for a period. There wasn't even any of the outreach services. So it is an issue.
Have you spoken to the minister about it?
Minister Anne Rabbitt is meeting the Community Healthcare Organisation, I believe, on the 9th, and to discuss it. I mean, there has been a budget allocated for this. I think recruitment of staff is what I've been told is an issue. Service providers like, for example, Coaction, who are service providers in West Cork, they're looking for pay parity, and so they're leaking a lot of their staff to HSE service providers. So that's an issue that needs to be addressed, and the minister is acutely aware of that. Right. But it's certainly an issue, and it's not good enough, and we need to address it.
Okay, Lynn Boyd, and you've
Yeah, I mean, we've seen, I think it was 2 years ago now, that the government produced the disability capacity report, and we still haven't had an implementation review into that. So we need additional funding put in place. I think all of us will have constituents who come in and will talk to you, and as Michael said, they're worn out and they're exhausted. I know in one case of a mother who has an adult child and is of the firm belief that the reason why she can't get access respite is because her child is more difficult than others, and she sees people getting respite more frequently than she does. So there's absolutely a capacity issue here. I think it's 1 in 3 carers of adults have access to respite, but you need to put in the additional resources and funds, and we need to see the implementation recommendations that came out of the government's own report from 2 years ago.
Okay.